67 for Sunday, November 26th. This is Brad Crandall. 561 persons have been killed on the nation's highways so far during this four-day Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Please, if you're headed home right now, drive safely. Be especially alert. And if you're tired, pull over and take a rest. In 3 minutes, a personal portrait of both the public and private side of President Johnson from a correspondent who's with him every day of the week. Monitor music after this brief memo. Remember, this Christmas, as every Christmas, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5.
I tell myself, what's done is done. I tell myself, don't be a fool. Play the field, have a lot of fun. It's easy when you play it cool. I tell myself, don't be a chump. Who cares? Let him stay away. That's when the phone rings and I jump. And as I grab the phone, I pray. After a while, I myself again. I pick the pieces off the floor, put my heart on the shelf again. He'll never hurt me anymore. I'm not a puppet on a string. I'll find somebody else someday. That's when the phone rings. And once again, I start to pray. Let it please be him. Oh, dear God, it must be him. It must be him. Or I shall die. Or I shall die. Oh, and then I die. Again.
That was Vicky Carr's big hit of the moment, It Must Be Him. Depending upon which poll you follow, President Johnson's current image is both rising and falling. One man who has an intimate knowledge of Lyndon Johnson, both as a president and a person, is columnist and author Hugh Seide. His job is to follow the president through every day of every work week, covering his leisure activities as well as his official duties in office. Mr. Seide offers a fascinating close-up of President Johnson, his habits and personal preferences, as he chats with Monitor reporter Lee Klein in Des Moines, Iowa.
You say President Johnson is just a little bit more of everything. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean he's just bigger than life. You know, he's just a big man that strides over this country in seven-league boots. He tries to make everybody believe what he believes. He goes with sleep, without sleep, longer than anybody. He eats more than anybody when he eats. He swears more when he swears. He legislates more when he legislates. He governs more when he governs. Just, he seems to have that old Texas syndrome that you've got to just do it bigger and better and faster and wilder than anybody. And as I say, one of his aides once gave that description to him and thought a while and said, yeah, he's just more.
Just more.
That's right.
He's a gadget man. Elaborate.
Oh, yes. He just loves these little things that say, Look, he's got all kinds of push buttons. You know, there are telephones that come out of drawers and telephones under tables. His office telephone has something like 37 buttons on it. He can ring bells, summon people. He's got a window that comes up and down with the light. So that in his bedroom, so he doesn't have to walk across the cold floor.
You mean it's according to the sun?
That's right.
Controller?
It's got an electric eye in it. It activates a motor so that when the sun comes up, the window goes down. And pretty fancy. You know, he's got television sets, and he just doesn't have a single television set. His television sets have three screens, and he's got an automatic control so that all the news programs can go at once, and he can turn the sound on for any of them. He can see himself there in living color three times, and three networks.
Transistor radio man.
That's right. Holds and carries those around in his pocket so he can get the latest news flashes. You
like
know.
A teenager almost.
Oh, he adopts everything. He uses plastic cups and felt tip pens and any kind of a new device. He's the first man to have it, you know.
An automated pepper mill?
Oh, that's right. I was amazed one time we were at lunch and he grabbed this thing and pressed the button and the motor startled us all. You know, a great roar and the pepper came out. That sort of thing.
I've never heard of an automated pepper mill before.
Oh, it's quite fancy, yes. Uh-huh.
You're a professional president watcher, we say, because you write the presidency column in Life magazine each week. And you covered President Kennedy. You wrote a book called John F. Kennedy President. And the other president would be someone of President Eisenhower also. In comparing where you go with President Kennedy and where you went and where you go with President Johnson.
Well, that's kind of my personal preference, of course. With Kennedy, we used to... of course, we correspondents, it should be explained, go with the president when he goes on vacation or when he takes a weekend. And President Kennedy used to sojourn in the winter down in Palm Beach, and in the summer he'd go up to Cape Cod at Hyannisport. And that was very lovely for us correspondents. We enjoyed that very much. Now, with Johnson, we go to Texas in the summer, in the fall, the winter, and the spring. There's one place he likes. That's his ranch. And we alternate between Austin and San Antonio, Texas. Lovely cities, both of them. However, in great doses, well, what I need to say is we need a little seashore now and then.
I'd like to know how many times I've heard a person say, I wouldn't be president for all the money in the world. Then why do men seek so actively the presidency of the United States?
Oh, I think that's nonsense. I'm not saying that the people who say I wouldn't be president don't mean it. But strong men, that's a great job for strong men. Those men who like power and the exercise of power, who've got a little of the old missionary zeal in their heart and want to do good, that's the place for them to be, and they love it. They live like a king. They're, you know, the glory and the majesty of that job, and there's been nothing like it. And if you're in politics, and if, or even on the periphery, if you're a man in big business and you see what makes this world go round in this day, there it is. And if you seek the ultimate ambition, well, you want to be there. I think it's a great job.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk to you. We've been talking to Hugh Seide, who writes a column called The Presidency in Life magazine and is author of the book called John F. Kennedy President. Now back to Monitor.
Eddie Arnold is next. The song is titled, Here Comes Heaven.
Here comes heaven, all satin and lace. Love in her heart and a smile on her face. She's the world to me. Heaven is all my heart can see. Thank you.
Scientists are still struggling with that perplexing question, is there intelligent life in outer space? Our regular World of Space reporter, Peter Hackus, traces the latest efforts to find out in just a few minutes. So stay on the monitor, Deacon.
Darling, let us have some Chateau Martin wine. Your eyes shine like Chateau Martin sparkling burgundy. Your ruby red lips are like Chateau Martin's blackberry wine, and your body have some Chateau Martin wine.
I'll bet you hand this wine to all the girls.
And they love it.
The next time you hand a girl a wine, make it Chateau Martin Champagne, the delightful New York State champagne made from choice grapes, carefully selected from the vineyards of New York's celebrated Finger Lakes, to give you that very special Chateau Martin flavor. Flavor that bubbles over and adds sparkle to every occasion. The next time you hand a girl a wine, make it Chateau Martin Champagne.
I am nuts about the Chateau Martin wine.
My brother, the rock and roll singer.
Chateau Martin Wines, New York. Makers of famous Chateau Martin vermouth. Had any lately?
Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. You're still with Monitor. The time, 20 minutes after the hour. And here to wish you a happy, lazy day, Spanky and our gang. Exploration continues at such a rapid rate, it's difficult to keep pace. In an effort to keep you informed on all the latest developments, Monitor presents World of Space every weekend. This time, we reopen an old question. Is there intelligent life in outer space? For some provocative comments, here is Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
The flying saucer people, those who say they believe such things exist and come from faraway planets, have one thing in common with the scientific community. Both groups believe there is other intelligent life in space. Without again getting into the flying saucer controversy, let me point out not only the possibility, but indeed the probability that they are correct. A Harvard astronomer named Carl Sagan looks at it as a philosophical numbers game. He and several others calculate the number of stars, totals conservatively a figure they call 10 to the 20th. That's 10 with 20 zeros added onto it. By figuring that the number of stars, that is the number of suns, which have planets in their solar systems, might be 1 in 1,000, that reduces the figure to 10 to the 17th. Assuming that of that number, 1 in 1,000 planets would have the right gravity, distance from their sun, and so on, the figure comes down to 10 with 14 zeros after it. And if you calculate that 1 in 1,000 of these has the proper atmosphere for chemical evolution, that reduces the number to 10 to the 11th, where life of some kind could exist. Of those planets, if only 1 in 1,000 supports intelligent life, the figure comes down to 10 to the 8th, or 100 million planets where intelligent life might exist. For several years, we listened for intelligent signals from outer space with a huge antenna in West Virginia without success. That program was stopped about 5 years ago when other priorities overtook it. To really listen, I'm told, we'd need more than one giant electronic ear, fully computerized, working 24 hours a day, scanning several frequencies for at least 2 years. One of the gnawing questions the scientists have to wrestle with is this. If there are 100 million planets supporting intelligent life, why haven't they tried to look us up? The astronomers say it's logical to assume that half of those 100 million planets have civilizations far more developed than ours, so why haven't they come looking for us? Well, the frustrating answer from one NASA scientist is this. They probably have. But suppose in their schedule of sending out probes to all 100 million planets, they placed the Earth somewhat down the list toward the middle. That would mean they might have sent a probe toward Earth once every 10,000 years or so. And suppose they did just that, about 6 or 7,000 years ago. Surely they wouldn't have found much intelligent life here on Earth at that time. And it might be another 3 or 4,000 years before they try it again. How's that for frustration? Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
Keep up with the world of space every weekend on Monitor. Astrid Gilberto on Monitor. Got a gift problem? Remember, this Christmas, as every Christmas, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5. Orchestra, and the world's a lovely place. Monitor, where the weekend world comes alive, spanning the nation on NBC Radio. Southwestern Michigan hears us on WBCK, the voice of the serial city, Battle Creek, Michigan. Monitor returns shortly with The World and Washington, an in-depth analysis of the United States' role in the world, produced by NBC News. This is Brad Crandall.
This is the NBC Radio Network.
Happiest Millionaire, another masterful musical motion picture from Walt Disney. Starring Fred McMurray, Tommy Steele, Greer Garson, Geraldine Page, and introducing Leslie Ann Warren and John Davidson. Brilliant cast, story that sparkles with warmth and humor. 11 new hit songs. See Walt Disney's The Happiest Millionaire.
It's the Happy Christmas Holiday Show starting this Thursday at the Radio City Music Hall. On the screen, Walt Disney's The Happiest Millionaire, the musical event of the year starring Fred McMurray, Tommy Steele, Greer Garson, and Geraldine Page. The Happiest Millionaire and the Great Christmas Show starts this Thursday at the Radio City Music Hall. Conversation flows on the Brad Crandall Speak Easy weeknights after the 9 o'clock news on WNBC New York.